Affairs Committee will please come to order. It's 10 minutes after 8, February 9th, 2012. Welcome, everybody. I'd like to introduce our House State Affairs Committee. We have Representative Pete Peterson, Representative Paul Seaton, Representative Kyle Johansson, Vice Chair Wes Keller, myself, Bob Lynn. And we are going to consider again HB 311. And the subject of that is, the official title, I guess, is Reports to APOC. That's Alaska Public Officers Commission. And upon advice from our legal people and so on, there's some glitches in the one we put out. And so as a result, I'm going to entertain a motion from our vice chair to rescind our vote on HB 311 that we took, I guess, the day before yesterday. Representative Keller.
Yeah. Under the advice of Ledge Legal, I move to rescind our action on HB 311. That was India version amended that we moved from committee. Rescind that action.
Yeah, and I might point out that bill never left the possession of House State Affairs Committee. So it was always here. And so is there any objection on that, or Representative Johansson?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to object only to see if we could have just a brief description of what the issue Ledge Legal brought up. And somebody, is there anybody that can do that?
Or well, I think so, yes. Yes. And of course, you weren't here when we went through all that and the aftermath of that. So,
yes, Mr. Chairman, I have reviewed the minutes and the audio of the committee hearing, but I'd like to hear from
very good.
Things have happened between meetings that I'd like to put on the record.
Okay. Good morning, Madam Minority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, and through the chair to Representative Johansson.
And that's Beth Kutula.
Thank you. Right. Beth Kutula, Representative District 3. It's really not a glitch. What happened was, in drafting the legislation, Representative Hawker wanted to be sure to clarify that you could consider electronic forms. I went the next step and thought, well, why not allow paper then, too? Since then, which was never his desire, since then, after talking with APOC and many of the members of the legislature who do file in paper, it's a policy call, but I've been completely turned around to realize that the movement is toward the electronic filing, that everyone has moved toward that, and while APOC allows waivers and will continue to do so on cases where people can't find a computer, don't have the ability, that really I was kind of returning to the last century or maybe two centuries ago. And so what we're doing in the new legislation that will be hopefully before you is to allow a one-year grace period, essentially, through a campaign cycle to bring everybody onto the electronic filing. So it wasn't really a glitch. It was a policy call. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll remove my objection.
Okay, fine. Any other objections? If not, HB 311 is hereby rescinded. And Vice Chair Keller, do you have any other motions you'd like to make?
Yeah, I'd like to move
hopefully.
I'd like to move that we put House Bill 311, CS for House Bill 311, right now is a blank CS version Delta, before the committee for explanation discussion.
And I'd like also to point out that I just now, or what, about 15 minutes ago, received the new CS for reasons unknown. It was very tardy in getting to us, so I apologize for it, Ledge Legal, for that. It makes it rather difficult, but we've skim-read this, and this is the job of the committee this morning, to go over this and point out differences, if necessary, between the bill we just rescinded and this new CS. And so with that, I'd like to welcome the presenter, representing Mike Hawker.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Good morning, sir. It's a pleasure to be back with you again.
I don't believe that. Okay.
And members of the committee, as Representative Kutula explained, she had a reconsideration of what she was comfortable with, which, frankly, I endorse because it becomes more in alignment with what I believe would have been a better course of policy call in the first presentation. And, Mr. Chairman, if it pleases you and the committee, what I would like to do is simply not try to talk too much about what differences are, but really talk about what this bill proposal in front of us does.
Representative Johansson.
I apologize. Parker, I know you're in the middle of a sentence. Should we
bring the microphone close to you, please.
Should we adopt the CS if we're going to address it through the sponsor? Or
would you move the microphone closer, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Should we adopt a CS since he's going to...
That might be a cool idea.
Yeah.
Representative Johansson, I'll let you do it.
I'll move we adopt version D, please.
Okay. Without objection, version D is adopted.
Thank you. I apologize.
That was an oversight on my part. Representative Parker.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, not a problem. We now let the record reflect that we are discussing not the CS that is being proposed for introduction, but it is the CS that has been introduced. Biggest change in concept here is under the previous way of looking at this, we were looking at requiring we were making electronic filing an option and allowing any candidate who chose to file in paper that option. They were assured the ability to file paper. Electronic filing was an option. The bill that's in front of us recognizes that we want the default position to be that electronic filing is mandatory, with two exceptions, one that already exists in statute, and that is that APOC is empowered to make an exemption from that electronic filing based on their determination of the expediency for a specific candidate. That's already in statute. And secondly, because we are in the process now of undergoing a significant change of electronic reporting mechanisms, it was just really first, released and brought up at very close to the end of the last calendar year, this bill contains a transition provision that allows paper filing for one more year, essentially.
The election cycle that we're currently
at. The end of this election cycle, yes, Mr. Chairman. So the way the language, the bill works, Section 1 of the bill, it is absolutely consistent with the bill we passed previously, and that is we want to make sure that when we impose electronic filing, that Item 1, that whatever the form is that is prescribed by APOC is accessible on the Internet website of the Commission. And we had that conversation our last time here. And basically, we want anyone that wants to be a candidate goes one-stop shopping. They can find the required electronic reporting access to that electronic form on the website of the commission. We secondly, and again, very consistent with the previous legislation, we also want to be certain to allow any candidate to file electronically in a manner that involves submitting their data in the form of an electronic spreadsheet or data file in a format prescribed by the Public Offices Commission. Now, the practical effect of that here is we want to encourage the Commission to create a filing mechanism, an electronic filing mechanism that is easy for candidates to use and attracts their use. But if for whatever reason a candidate has a difficult time either accessing that system through the web or otherwise, they are able to submit their data on an electronic spreadsheet in a format prescribed by the Public Offices Commission. By prescribing an electronic spreadsheet format, the Commission has the ability, as they currently do, to take that data and readily electronically upload it into whatever their internal systems are. So again, we're just saying they can create a sophisticated system with a sophisticated front end, but we still want them always to allow us to submit data electronically that they can then import into that same system.
And I'd like to point out that when Representative Wilson and Representative Grunberg have excused absences.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Johansson.
Can we hold our questions? The sponsor or you want us to hold questions until the end, or do it section by section?
It's all right to go through it now. Ask your question.
Is that your liking, Representative Hawker? Just so I understand, Section 1 basically is they're going to have the form that we go online and click and do what they're trying to accomplish. Part 2, would Part 2 ever sunset, or would this be a continual option into the future?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, it is a permanent provision assuring that a candidate may always use, may always submit their data to APOC in the form of an electronic spreadsheet or data file, and emphasizing that data file or spreadsheet has to conform to standards established by APOC so that it is compatible with their system.
Okay. And then one
follow-up.
And this is whether or not a person would apply for an exemption. This is either with or without an, I mean, if you apply for an exemption, you can do it in paper or however you deal with APOC. This is available to everybody, whether they apply for an exemption or not. Is that
through correct? The chair, Representative Johansson, that is correct.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Continue, please.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. So again, Section 1 is absolutely consistent with the parameters that were in the previous bill we discussed. Section 2, sir, Mr. Chairman, this is the provision that changes statute section 110, for the better record, 15.13.110, which is essentially telling APOC how what they need to disclose to the public. And we're saying here, we're just making it very, very clear that APOC satisfies its requirement to publish information that is filed in paper by posting a copy of that in a scanned image on the Commission's website within 2 days after they receive it. The two-day period is consistent with the reporting mandate. It's in Section 15.013.040, which is talking about when the Commission determines there's an exception to the electronic filing rule and they're going to accept paper from someone. We already have a provision in statute, subsection O, that says that information that is required by this chapter that is submitted to the Commission on paper and not electronically, this is existing statute, shall be electronically scanned and published on the Internet by the Commission in a format accessible to the general public within 2 working days after the Commission receives it. So in this section of the law, we're saying the Commission offers someone an exemption, that person files in paper, the Commission is required to report it on their web within 2 days. We're mirroring that same language where we talk about further disclosure requirements in Section 110, and simply saying the same thing. They satisfy their disclosure obligations by putting that image on their Internet website within 2 days.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Johansson.
Thank you. In all the references in Section 2 to the paper filing and time frames are all going to go away with the sunset of the paper portion in a year. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Johansson, I'm not sure I understand you. Under current statute, which is not being changed by this legislation, electronic filing is mandatory and paper filing is only by exception.
Okay, so
continue.
I think I'm getting where you're going. So those paper filings, which are accepted by the, that's what this references and not the
Through the chair, Representative Hansen, you are correct.
Thank you for walking me through that. It's early in the morning.
Representative Johansson, I have been walking through this for days.
And one further question, if I might, Mr. Chairman. On page 2, line 8 and 9, the electronic summaries available within 30 days after the report is filed. Is that?
And if I might, Mr. Chair, that was the next item I would like to address.
No problem.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, the second component of Section 2 is the current statute requires basically all filings with the Commission to be summarized. The Commission shall prepare a summary, and then that summary was to be made available within 30 days after each election. We're actually, and again, consistent with the bill that was before us before, we are accelerating the requirement for that summary to be refiled for electronic reports from 30 days after the election to 30 days after the report is filed. And to be honest, with electronic reporting, I mean, this basically, it should be pretty much available instantaneously, but current statute says they don't have to do it until 30 days after the election. give them a grace period of saying within 30 days after the report is filed, and quite frankly, I would expect to see them have it up like 20 minutes after the report's filed.
And so I file my campaign report, contribution, expenditures, and so on, and then when does that become available to the general public? Today, and how would this bill change it?
Through the chair, I would simply say that the statute requires that a summary of that report be made available to the public 30 days after each election. Statutorily, we're accelerating that to within 30 days after the report is filed. And just as I would not speak for the commission, but anecdotally, I would say that those reports, you know, if you file electronically currently, they show up very quickly, within a day or two. If other mechanisms of filing, they can take a little longer. But we're simply telling the commission here we want it to be within 30 days.
I'm still have all of us here and any other candidates out there, we have a report that's due to be filed before the 15th of February, which is, I guess, sometime next week. When will the general public be able to view the reports all of us candidates put in?
Mr. Chairman, that would be a question for the commission.
Okay. Somebody remind me when he gets on board. Yeah. Representative Seaton.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, for clarification, I think here we're talking about the commission on line 4 on page 2. We're talking the commission shall prepare a summary of each report. So if those are electronically submitted, it should be very simple and easy and quick to prepare those summaries, because you'll be taking lines and but this isn't a candidate report's summary and taking that long. This is the summary prepared by the commission of the report. And
okay, thank you.
No problem. Thanks.
Representative Hawker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then the last item, which is line 10, page 2, it still allows that a report that is filed on paper, and emphasize again that as this becomes effective, paper reports are available only by exception and allowance determined by the commission. But what if they allow an exception and allow filing on paper, that they still have up to 30 days after each election to post that summary. And the reason there is the paper report has to be transcribed, typed, turned into an electronic format, takes longer. So we're leaving existing statute intact for reports filed on paper and recognizing, again, as the statute works, paper filing is an exception condition allowed at the determination of the APOC. Section 3 gets us to a point that, as drafted here, and I'm, Mr. Chairman, I also was rather frustrated yesterday that we had submitted the drafting and it was sitting over in the revisor's office from like 8:30 in the morning until I received a copy last night of this bill at 7 o'clock in the evening. So I have been here since rather early this morning going through this myself, and I have an amendment that should be on your table to fix what we intended to do in section 3, and apologize because I do not prefer to come to committee with amendments. But in this case, due to the expeditious time requirement, I really had to approach this through an amendment.
Would you want us to consider this amendment now or wait till after you
if you
through the whole thing?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to just talk through it.
Okay.
And section 3, the intent behind this section is to provide statutory guidance to the Alaska Public Offices Commission, directing them that if they are going to change the manner or format in which reports are required from a candidate, and manner or format, essentially that means changing their electronic system, if they're going to impose a change in the electronic system, that change cannot be imposed in the middle of a campaign period. That change must be required between campaigns. You know, folks noticed, and where that was driven by was the notice that we received December 29th, after most of us had had 6 months or so of a current campaign, that we had to retroactively adopt a new electronic system. and essentially all the work that we had done in good faith, commencing at the beginning of our campaign, using the laws and regulations in, that were in effect at that time, were going to be retroactively, essentially, rescinded. And quite frankly, for those of us sitting here in office, we're in Juneau. We're in the legislature. We, unless you have brought your own personal computing equipment from Anchorage, you don't have a computer down here that you can legally use to conduct campaign activities. So again, as a person who spent a lot of time also in business and management doing systems conversions, you generally don't do your systems conversion in the middle of your busiest season. You find downtime, you find times that where it is in an interval between business cycles. So here, the intent of this paragraph is to say, if you're going to mandate any change in format or reporting mechanisms, and I'm be very careful, change in the manner or format in which reports are required, you have to do it between campaigns, not during one.
Question. One can file for candidacy almost any time. For example, I filed over a year ago for my new candidacy. Other people file at different times. We don't know who's going to be filing really until 5 o'clock on June 1st. So, what's the campaign period from somebody who files last year for the current campaign, or somebody files at 5 minutes to 5 on June 1st?
Mr. Chairman, that was the next sentence I'd like to talk about.
I anticipate.
Thank you, sir. And I'd like to parse this paragraph into two sentences. The first sentence will be as it exists in the bill. The second sentence will be replaced by the definition in the amendment. So the first sentence discusses or provides the premise that during a campaign period, which we will define in the second sentence, the commission may not change the manner or format in which reports required of a candidate, and emphasize a candidate, that's a single candidate, under this chapter must be filed. So it is applying this paragraph to an individual candidate's circumstance. And I want to make that very clear on the record, and if you might, Mr. Chairman, I will state it again.
Please.
The intent of that paragraph is to apply this determination of where your interval between campaigns exists to individual candidates. And that is why reports required of a candidate under this chapter are the words. And the key point here is that there are many different ways you can become a candidate. We also have elections on different cycles. We have municipal elections. We have state elections. Rather than trying to inventory all of those separate elections and all the different ways you can become a candidate, you can file as a party candidate. You can go out and become a candidate and start conducting campaign activity with a letter of intent. Or you can go straight out to the Division of Elections and file a declaration of candidacy. You can go through the nominating petition process. You actually can lose a primary election, and there's statutory provisions that allow you to run as a write-in candidate in the general election. So there are this myriad of candidates.
I've heard of that before.
Yes, sir. So we wanted this next sentence to be to define what the campaign period is, to be as generic as possible, but provide the ability for an individual candidate's campaign, the beginning and ending dates, to be specifically ascertained within the entire context, of course, our campaign law. And that's why we go to the amendment and we define campaign period beginning on line 6 of the amendment. Campaign period, and for all of us familiar with this, means the period beginning on the date that a candidate becomes eligible to receive campaign contributions. Now, stating that generically, that beginning period, and for the purposes of transitioning basically campaign accounting systems, what could be a more appropriate date? The beginning date is the date that you have the ability to start collecting money and are required to start keeping records. And that date you become eligible to receive campaign contributions, we can go through the whole machinations in statute, but it's a cleat that's very clearly determinable for each individual candidate for each individual election. So the beginning date is the date you become eligible to receive campaign contributions under this chapter, and ending. So this is that campaign cycle during or period in which a change may not be imposed upon you, a reporting change may not be imposed on you. The ending date is the date that a final report for the campaign must be filed. The beginning date is the date you are able to receive contributions. Ending date is the date that a final report for that campaign, the campaign, must be filed. It is very clearly intended to say a candidate, a campaign. End of cycle. Under the height, let's just say, and it's a hypothetical, there's questions raised whether this section could be gamed. And just throw the hypothetical, and because it emphasizes it is a candidate, a campaign. Say your final report is not due quite yet for the campaign you finished, but you go out and file a letter of intent that says, I'm going to run for the next campaign. Fine. But that's a whole new campaign. APOC may still impose a change of reporting between those two campaigns. There is absolutely the intent there that for the APOC to be able to impose a change of system between those two campaigns. Because, again, even though you go out and file that letter of intent and overlap, you still can't raise money until 18 months before the general election. That operates under separate statute, so we'll always put a window in there. This paragraph may not be gamed, and somebody may not try to trick them and just keep rolling a do-loop.
I'd like to point out Resident Wilson has not joined us. Welcome.
So, Mr. Chairman, it's a lengthy explanation there, but it's very important to talk about how that works, and it is, again, single campaign allowing APOC to mandate changes in the format or form in which reports of a candidate are filed between those campaign periods. We have two transition periods in this bill as well. Again, these are the same periods we saw. Section 4 addresses essentially the reason we're back before us today. There are candidates. In fact, Representative Grunberg's here on this panel talked to us at the last meeting we had. He's a paper filer. He files his reports by paper. He's ready to file by paper for this campaign cycle, but he has no idea how to use this electronic system that was mandated to us December 29th. So we have created essentially a one-year window, a temporary exception to the electronic filing requirement, basically to allow us all to get through this campaign cycle, and then all those paper filers are on notice. They must adopt electronic filing for the next campaign cycle. So that's why we have this temporary exemption. Despite its 151300M, which is the section of statute that mandates electronic filing, that in spite of electronic filing requirement, until February 16, 2013, which is the day after our last reports are due for this election cycle, the commission may request the candidate to submit the information electronically, but it shall accept any information that is essentially meeting the clear, legible black typeface for paper filing. So this exception says for the rest of this one particular campaign cycle, the paper filing shall be acceptable. But it's only this cycle. After that, we revert completely to the electronic filing mandate that's actually been on the books since 2007, but has not been enforced.
Thank you. Any questions so far? Right here? Okay, continue.
And Section 5 of the bill is a protection clause here, and it also basically says that any one of us who, during this campaign cycle, has submitted electronic information via a spreadsheet to be uploaded consistent with the requirements that we're now saying will be permanent into the future, that Section 1 of the bill, or on a paper format that was approved by the commission, that we will not be subject to a penalty for failure to file. And again, the whole idea here is we're making both the exception to the filing, but we also want to be sure that even though we have filed in that way, that we're not subject to, with all respect, we're all subject to penalties for failing to comply currently. And again, as I said before, Mr. Chairman, I will state again for the record, I have a conflict of interest here because on the 1st of February, I filed with the Alaska Public Offices Commissions all of the statutorily required disclosures, but I filed them in the format of a spreadsheet that was acceptable up until December 29th. I do not have the electronic equipment, personal computer equipment here in Juneau to legally avail myself of the electronic system that is being imposed. I filed it with a request that those with APOC that my filing be accepted with as compliance with statute, but I, not being a lawyer, but I believe that right now they could fine me for in a filing that is not inconsistent with their regulations, in that we're remedying the problem and allowing spreadsheets into the future. This provision says that I and all others who file, whether it be paper like Representative Grunberg or an electronic spreadsheet like I have done, will not be subject to a fine for this election cycle. We have, in fact, fully complied with the disclosure requirements by law.
Any questions at this point? If not, please continue.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 6 is the retroactivity provision that basically takes Sections 1 and 4 of this bill. That is us where we are saying that it shall be legal to file by spreadsheet or file by using the form that they prescribe on their website, taking those dates retroactive to December 1st, 2011, which goes back to the beginning of this campaign cycle. It's essentially, it's a retroactive date, isn't making this law retroactive to the beginning of the campaign cycle. A bit of a formality there, but again, it is to protect everyone that is caught up in this circumstance of one, and then the passage of this bill and trying to clarify what we intend for our campaign disclosures to be. So, Mr. Chairman, that's again, that is the bill. And could I ask, sir, Representative Curtula wants to discuss something. Could I ask for a brief at ease, sir?
Tiny second.
That'd be fine. And also, then we want to see about the amendment.
Right.
Representative Curtula.
Oh, I just need to let Representative Hawker know something.
Brief at ease.
Thank you. Okay.
State Affairs Committee will please come back to order. Any further comments at this point? We may want to consider the amendment after beginning.
Mr. Chairman, I believe we are absolutely prepared to take up the amendment that addresses the provision that the words we wish Section 3 to state to assure that APOC is being directed that when they impose a change in the manner or format in which reports are required of a candidate, that it can only be done between election cycles. So, Mr. Chairman, you have an amendment in front of you, sir.
I'll entertain a motion for this amendment, which would be
Mr. Chair, I will move Amendment 1, and I'll go ahead and read it into the record, so if you'd all follow closely to make sure it's exactly what's documented. But on page 2, line 15, after the period, after subsection, we delete campaign period means the period beginning on the date, and then I won't read the rest, but it's through the following, the end of the sentence there on line 18. So that's deleted. And then what is inserted is after the word subsection, so that's this section would read, this sentence would read, in this subsection, campaign period means the period beginning on the date that a candidate becomes eligible to receive campaign contributions under this chapter and ending on the date that a final report for that same campaign must be filed, period.
Okay. Reverend Wilson.
I object just for clarification. On line 15, the word subsection does not appear. I'm not supposed to be on June. Sorry.
Right there.
There we go.
Okay. So you remove the objection.
Got it.
Any Further discussion on the amendment?
I withdraw my.
Well, you're good. And Representative Peterson.
I just wanted to clarify, we are working on version Delta. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
Anything else? Okay. Without objection, amendment number one passes. Okay. Any other comments?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I sincerely appreciate your indulgence of the committee in this, and again, emphasizing that with the passage of amendment one, we're simply making it very clear that that requirement says that it, as regards a candidate, that you can have an imposition of a change in a in system format and a manner of format in which reporting between elections, but that it absolutely prohibits anyone to try to game the system by somehow trying to overlap their election cycles.
Okay, and Representative Couture, any other comments?
No, I just want to appreciate you for letting us come back, and I apologize sincerely for my rather large edition of paper filing, and also to reiterate what Representative Hawker just said. The idea is APOC can change the rules. They just can't do it in the one campaign cycle for that candidate. They can change the rule, then a candidate would have to change after that cycle. But during the same, that one, they can't change it.
Okay. And for the benefit mainly of the viewing and listening public here, I'm going to ask a couple of questions. I think we all know the answers to them. I'm going to ask them anyway. Is there anything in HB 311, the bill we're currently considering, that changes what we must report as far as contributions received for our campaigns or expenditures made? Is there anything at all?
Mr. Chairman, no. There are no changes to the current reporting requirements as to the substance of what need be reported.
And is there any change whatsoever in the ability of the public to view our reports and our campaign contributions and our expenditures?
Mr. Chairman, the only change there is that the electronically filed reports must be made available within 30 days of filing rather than 30 days after the election, an acceleration clause.
Right. So we maintain our transparency to the public on matters of campaigns insofar as contributions and expenditures are concerned.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Any further questions at this point? Representative Seaton, then we're going to go to testimony. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for clarification, get it on the record, the bill is submitted. The intention is only to change reporting requirements for individuals that are in a campaign, not for groups or non-group entities. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that is absolutely correct. And as you'll see the construct of the bill, it only goes to candidate filings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Again, not any of these other groups out there. Representative Johansson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before we move on to, I guess, public testimony is what you said. Since we have the two, the sponsors, the rules chairman, but obviously you guys are doing the legwork on it.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
And I know that Representative Hawker is obviously dedicated to moving towards electronic. He's a very actually signed on to an electronic bill, and I know that in his mind the best thing to do is to move to electronics for transparency and speed to get that out to the people. So I was looking through some of the information that my staff put together, and it occurred to me that the next reporting period for legislators after the year end takes place in 6 months. And I'm wondering if there's any sort of thought of entertaining your concept through the year-end reporting period and pick up with what APOC has worked for an entire year to try at our direction for the next report, which is the 30-day report, which takes place 30 days prior to the August primary. I think, at least in my personal case, between now and the 30-day period in the next 6 months, that I could probably find enough time to learn and acclimate myself to the new system. So just the basic question, is that anything that the two of the people have looked at or thought about, or is there a, would be opposition to such a proposal? Thank you.
Right. Through the chair, Representative Johansson, I talked with APOC, some of the board members and the executive director, and we always talked about 1 year, and really what we were meaning, though, was one cycle. And it goes toward the fact that I think people like to think in that whole cycle, and rather than split it up in 6 months, that's where we start, at least for me personally, I start getting confused. If I have to shift in the middle of the campaign in a cycle, it becomes more difficult. I think if we can get people through that whole cycle, that's a policy call, but that's where we headed. So that was why, getting people through that cycle. Again, that was why the amendment, to be sure the rules don't get changed in the middle of just that candidate's one cycle. You can change after that, you just can't change during it. And so that's the way that's why it's before you this way. Also, I might add, since starting this adventure, APOC is trying as fast as they can to get the computer system up and running. This will definitely, in my opinion, allow that. So everybody gets used to it, starts to use it, or does their electronic filing in the other format, and I think the cycle is the better way to go.
Mr. Chair,
I might follow up
and respond. Mr. Chair, there is nothing in this legislation that prohibits a candidate who desires to adopt a electronic filing mechanism before they are statutorily mandated to. So an individual candidate who wishes to adopt this in the middle of their campaign certainly could go back and retroactively adopt and change their filings as long as it's within the regulatory process acceptable to the APOC. So there's nothing prohibiting an earlier application. And if I might, Mr. Chairman, I just recognized, based on the prefacing comments to that question, for this hearing today, if you'd allow me the latitude to sort of explain how we got to be here, in the fact that this legislation before you, House Bill 310, was introduced by the House Rules Committee. It is being presented by myself and Minority Leader Representative Kurtula to make it very clear on the record that this is nonpartisan, absolutely ministerial legislation intended to make it clear and easy for both the legislators, the public, candidates who may or will file. This is not in any way, shape, or form any kind of a partisan piece of legislation intended in any way to change the ultimate obligation we have to the people of the state of Alaska to be fully transparent with the activities involved in our campaigns.
Does the Minority Leader agree?
Yes, thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Johansson.
Thank you. Just a couple things. For the Minority Leader, and I hate to drag this on, but as she knows, transparency and money in politics is one thing that I've worked on, not only as a legislator, but as a staff member. It's very important for me that the public gets the information as quick as possible. So you mentioned in your discussions with APOC, it was always based around the concept of the one-year cycle. Were those conversations, did you even have a conversation with them couched in the terms of maybe we can do this now? Because I understand we've all been filing, or some people by paper. The deadline, the decision came very couple weeks ago, a month ago, get this year-end thing. I mean, was there any discussion about just getting over this little glitch here, and then 6 months later, when our next reports are due, that we could be able to somehow figure out how to mandate everybody do it that way?
Well, through the chair, where we started was my thought of which would have continued paper forever. So the problem was that by starting at that rather broad stage, I think that it got everybody kind of by surprise, so no, and perhaps we should have, but I didn't.
Okay, and then just one more thing.
Yes.
You mentioned that maybe this year extension would give APOC time to get up and running, but if they made a decision to implement this, I think on December 29th or whatever the date was, I would assume that if they said this is the way it's going to be, that they are ready to go. So do they? Do you really think they need more time to figure it out?
Through the chair, I think everybody needs the transition time. It was our doing. It's the legislature that required the electronic filing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, sometimes you say it, and then life goes a little bit in a different direction, and I just think that's what happened here. And I think that, as Representative Hawker correctly points out, anyone can start electronically filing now. APOC will help you through that system. I believe that they will understand the situation as they've said they would to me. So I think that this is the reasonable compromise, and I take credit. I mean, Representative Hawker started out with electronic filing, allowing people to do it in different forms. I take credit for the broad paper filing, and then think that this is a worthwhile compromise, if you will.
And we're going to be hearing from APOC in just a few moments. Representative Johansson.
Just one final point of information. I know that Representative Hawker used Representative Gruenberg as an example of somebody who does it paper, and I just want to
quill pen,
and just make the point that Representative Gruenberg, his treasurer, were both present during electronic filing training. He filed electronically, and his other treasurer is Ted Mattson, his staff member, who is extremely capable and watches these committees, and I think he would have a pretty easy time navigating the online filing. So Representative Gruenberg is quite able to do online filing, I must say, I'm sure. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that what has come about with this, as with many bills that we pass through, many times there are unintended consequences, and this is just one of those unintended consequences that it just happened that a lot of us would have to, and I have been filing electronically for quite some time, so to get us to change gears right in the middle is very difficult when we've got all this work. We're here. Now, the people that haven't been here during a 120-day session don't realize how much more that we are just under this heavy burden right now, and we don't need to be taking our mind off what we're doing right now. And we can't campaign during this time. We have to be zeroed in on what's going on around us, and that's why it's so important for us right now to be looking at what's going on in this session and making sure we're doing the right things. And this is going to really relieve a little bit of that, I think, for almost everybody.
Yes, we are elected to do a job, and we're trying to do it. Representative Keller.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I know you're going to have APOC up here, but while the sponsors are here, I just wanted to make the comment that we adopted a zero fiscal note for HB 311, and listening to the testimony, there's no reason why it does not apply to the new version. I'm assuming that we still have an adopted zero fiscal note for this. That's how I'll move it when we get the opportunity. I just wanted to put that out now in case somebody had a question.
Okay. Anything else? Okay. Any other questions for the two presenters for this bill? Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I just wanted to get it on the record to make it crystal clear that the intent of this legislation is not to try to make a loophole for any legislator to not have to file their information and not make it available for the public to see. The intent of this legislation is to give us a chance to transition to the new system so that it'll make it easier for the APOC to get the information out to the public in a much more timely manner. I think that's the intent.
That's correct. I mean, electronic file, you know. I'm going to encourage everybody to do it, but those of you who can't, this will allow a transition.
And Mr. Chairman, I would
thank you, Reverend Peter. That's exactly why I asked those previous questions.
Right.
Did it change any of the transparency or requirements on any of that? That's why I asked those previous questions. Representative Hawker.
Mr. Chairman, I would just characterize the legislation before your committee as it is nonpartisan best business practice legislation.
And how about the word practical?
That also, sir.
Okay. Which I suppose is not a legal term, but it's a good term. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Just for clarification, we've been talking about ourselves, elected officials, but I just wanted to clarify the intent of this is for candidates, so that all the candidates that are filing across the state for this election cycle are influenced by this, not just elected officials. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is absolutely correct.
This does not apply.
This is a law of general applicability.
This does not apply to incumbents only. It applies to incumbent and also every other candidate who's a non-incumbent for some office.
Yes, okay. Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Okay. I'm going to ask, is Mr. Duvernay from APOC, Executive Director APOC, are you available, sir, online?
No.
Oh, you're right, available in person. That's even better. So you get to spend more time in Juneau, is that correct?
I love spreading the effects of the economy to other towns in Alaska.
Very good.
And I brought with me Joan Mize, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Mize is the coordinator of our office in Juneau.
Yeah, welcome. Thank you for coming back.
My pleasure, sir. Thank you for having me back. If I might make a few comments, sir?
Yes, please.
First, one thing I didn't make clear when I was here the other day, as executive director, I speak for the executive director and staff. I do not speak for the commission.
Understood.
Thank you, sir. The commission has not had time to see all the revisions and amendments to this bill. They have not had the time to deliberate on it. So I just want to make that clear to the committee as well. A couple of other points. While there is the continued requirement to scan documents that are filed on paper and get them up on the website, I would submit to you that this does hinder transparency to the public. You're looking at essentially a photograph. It's difficult to compare. You are requiring people to print out or make notes. APOC did not change the requirements to file electronically. In this case, we changed the form that the filing goes in on. I would also submit to you that by not using the new system, which is up and ready to go and running, those people who file that way have much more control over their data. There is a self-check mechanism in that program. It identifies for you any errors that were made. Did you not put in the name and occupation of a contributor who went over the threshold for that to be reported? That finds it for you. If we receive reports on paper or on a spreadsheet, we're not going to have time to do that check that the program does now. So we will transcribe them faithfully. And if it's not there, we're not going to have time to get a hold of people. And it's going to end up potentially going up scanned as an error. There's nothing we can do about that. This program takes care of that for you going in through MyAlaska.
I don't think any of us contemplate the benefits of electronic filing, the visibility, just the timing of it in this situation.
I understand, Mr. Chair, and I'm trying to let you know that these are some of the things that are going to fall out, I see as my job. I state the facts. If this passes or not passes, I still deal with the statute as it is. That's my job. And finally, as I said, the system is up and running, and we have had considerable training. We have had a fair number of people file using that program via MyAlaska. And this time, really, truly, finally, we have a computer that is available in the Juneau office for people who want to come over and file, actually two computers for people to come over and file. We know that there is a prohibition on using state materials to deal with campaign-related matters, but these are public computers in the Juneau office, so they are available for people if they want to come over and use those. And we have people who can help you file. And
I've already visited that office to start the process.
Good. We appreciate that, sir. A couple of things that we just want to make sure that we understand. This applies to candidates only. As Representative Seaton mentioned earlier, it does not apply to groups. In looking at statute 15.13.040. This does not move the exemption for municipalities under candidates from municipalities under 15,000. Is that correct?
Yes.
I'm trying to make sure we understand, okay, so we can proceed appropriately.
I'm getting the minority leader nodding her head in the affirmative, okay, which means up and down.
Yes, sir. And that's all I have for a statement at this time, sir.
Fine, thank you. Any questions for the APOC? Representative Johansson.
Thank you, and thank you for presenting yourself to the committee today. So you guys are ready to go?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, yes, we are.
Okay. And I want to make sure I have this correct because it's just my own research. The year-end report is due February 15th.
Through the chair, yes, it is.
And the next report that is due is 30 days prior to the primary. Is that correct?
Through the chair, yes, sir, that is correct.
Okay. And so if this bill were amended to say everybody gets to file their year-end report the way it was, which this bill is working on a year extension, and then say for the first 30-day report, you're going to have to go to the electronic period. Is that enough time for the APOC to interact with the candidates and let them know that this change? Would you feel comfortable with that exercise?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, yes, I would, but that's me. I work well with computers. I understand them. We are ready to take reports electronically via the MyAlaska portal. We have had training, and we have, to my knowledge, had either 58 or staffers from legislators, totaling 58 sitting members. Also, we have training scheduled just before the APOC meeting, which is in February, in Juneau.
What's the date of that?
The meeting itself is February 22 and 23.
Which would be after the mandated reporting period.
For this year, yes. Year-end report, that is correct. But, as I mentioned, sir, we've already had training, and we've had either staffers or sitting legislators, 58, from 58 sitting people.
Reverend Granson?
And you mentioned that the commission has not, I wanted to clarify this, they have not had time to analyze the initial legislation or the CS that we received this morning at 8 o'clock.
They have not, through the chair, pardon me, to Representative Johansson, certainly they have not had time to look at the CS. While they have, I have sent them copies of the original bill. I do not know if they have read it. And the commission has to deal with certain things in a public forum, so they have to have an open meeting and receive public comments, and I know that has not happened.
And finally, Mr. Chairman.
And Mr. Representative Johansson.
Thank you. And finally, your comment about the two public computers that are available at APOC, they are public computers, and what gives you the confidence that I can go over there without getting in trouble, basically? Have you requested an opinion from your legal people, or what leads you to say that the chairman said that he went over there and interacted with
I hope I'm not in trouble.
With folks during session. Well, yeah, I know. But, I mean, one of the issues that was brought up in the testimony and also in the hallways talking with other legislators is, hey, I'm down here in Juneau. I'm in session. I can't access a computer. I'd have to go to a library, and God forbid I have to do that. You know, APOC's right across the street. But now I hear people say, I can't go to APOC and file because it's against the law. So I need some comfort as to what the legal position is, whether I can go over there and use your computer that's available to everybody in the public or not. So what gives you that confidence?
Through the chair to Representative Johansson, because it is a public computer, it is stated that this is for the use of the public. It is, while it is, in fact, state property, it is meant to serve the public at large.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. That includes us.
And we are also, Mr.
Yeah,
Chair.
Please identify yourself for the record.
I am Joan Mize. I am the program coordinator for the Juneau APOC office.
Okay.
Also, because APOC is the entity that requires the reporting, then we have to provide you with the
means to do so. We have to provide you with the forms, with the computer, with that access. And because we, like I said, we are, the commission is the one that is requiring the reports, or who the state has, through the legislation, has said that we have to accept the reports. That's what we're here for. Therefore, that is why that it is perfectly acceptable to use those computers that are hooked up to the state network.
Thank you. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just one additional question about those public computers. What hours are they available? I mean, are they open on weekends?
Through the chair, Representative Peterson, the Juneau office is open 8 to 5, Monday through Friday. I think with a little bit of notice, we might be able to arrange some weekend hours as well. Thank you. If that's what's desired.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. Excuse me, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I just want to make sure that my understanding of the legislation is for all candidates all across the state. It's not just Juneau legislators.
Not just incumbents.
And not incumbents, not their staff, so that this applies to any candidate for election. I just want to make sure that we, as we sit here, we might focus that there's a computer here and that we have access to, but I want to make sure that we are fully aware that this law applies to all candidates, whether they're incumbents or not.
Through the chair to Representative Seaton, that is my understanding, and we also have computers available to the public in Anchorage as well. So all our two offices both have public computers.
But you have only offices in Anchorage and Juneau? Do you have it in Fairbanks or anywhere else?
We do not at this time, sir.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if this is just our ethics committee's view or not, but I have been told that I can't do anything like that on any money that was, or anything that was bought with state money. And so even my phone. So I had to turn around and buy a different phone so that I wouldn't be making a telephone call that might be a campaign telephone call on my phone. And so
your office phone, you mean?
No, not my office phone. I'm talking about a cell phone that I bought with my office money, which was state money. And so so I was told that I would have to buy a different phone because that was bought with state money. And so I'm saying, they said anything that was bought with state money, even though it's from our office account. So I bought a different phone, and I'm not using that other phone because I don't want to get into trouble. And so you're saying it's okay, but if that, even though they're supposed to be public computers, if they were bought with state money, then according to our ethics person, we can't use it. That's just what I'm telling you.
It does help the economy, I guess.
So that's where I'm coming from.
Through the chair, I think this is governed by AS24.60, and I don't remember the verbiage of that off the top of my head, and I don't have that statute with me.
But of course, you don't speak for the Legislative Ethics Committee either.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct.
Yeah. I know there are two different groups out there. Representative Johansson.
Thank you. I think the last point is very important, that if we have an opinion from the ethics people, rather than relying on what we heard or thought we heard somewhere or read somewhere, that the ethics people should speak for themselves. But I did have a question for you. Under the campaign rules for expenditures of campaign money, any candidate, and I'm asking, is this correct, that any candidate can purchase a computer and a printer with campaign money? Is that allowable? Because we're not allowed to buy a whole bunch of capital. I mean, I couldn't go buy a car and say I'm driving around the district and then keep it. But the computer is the one thing that you can buy and keep. Is that correct?
Through the chair to Representative Johansson, that is correct. And as you properly state, you can buy it with campaign money and then keep it afterwards. And that is that is allowable use.
Thank you.
Always wanted a new computer. Okay. I'm not going to do it. on the record. Anything else? Thank you very much, sir.
My pleasure. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Commissioner.
I'd like to ask the two presenters, Representative Hawker and Minority Leader Cotullo, do you have any responses to anything you heard from AIPOC just now?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mike Hawker, Representative Beth Cotullo with me. No, sir.
So, okay. I know some head shaking. I couldn't understand which way your head was moving in. So the answer is no. You don't have any argument with what was just presented.
No.
Any other questions while they're here?
Mr. Chairman, I would characterize the no as having no further comments other than what we placed on the record of testimony previously in this committee hearing and the previous hearing we had on 311 a couple of days ago.
Thank you very much. Okay. Is there anybody in the audience who would like to testify on HB 311? Is there anybody online who would like to testify on HB 311? Going once, twice, three times. Public testimony is closed. Time for a committee discussion. Any committee discussion on this bill? A resounding silence. I'll entertain a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move HB 311 version Delta as amended with the attached zero fiscal note from committee.
Any objection?
With individual recommendation.
With individual recommendation.
Thank you.
I'm objecting, yes.
Okay. Correct. Objecting for discussion or just objecting, or speak to your objection?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I object for the following reasons. I understand and appreciate the direction that Representative Hawker is moving towards. I think we both share a common goal of moving into the 21st century, and I really thank him for moving the minority leader away from paper. I know she has aversion to trees, and unless they're standing straight up and beautiful and green, that's another story. But seriously, I really do would like to explore preparing an amendment that would allow this extension to go through the year-end period, and also to have it go all electronic for the first 30-day report. So, and this is the last, the only and single committee of referral for this bill. This bill goes to the floor next. There's no other opportunity for this committee or any other committee to look at an amendment as such. So I respectfully object to moving this out of committee, and based on all of the activity here that's been happening to my left over the last minute and a half, and
I'm counting noses.
Yeah, I can tell you're counting votes here at the table. That's great, but it's not through any disrespect to the sponsors. I really appreciate that they're trying to do that, but this thing is moving so incredibly fast. It has one committee hearing. It's going to be on the floor. It's going to be over in the other body within a heartbeat, and I think we just need to take a breath and really look at the options that we have. I think we can, based on the testimony of the Public Offices Commission, we can alleviate the pressure and the issue that candidates have right now to get that information entered by February 15th. I have no problem giving basically a pass for everybody. And then we have 6 months, six entire months. And we're sitting here dealing with the biggest, most complicated issues, frankly, that the state has probably entered into in its history with all of the other legislation that we're dealing with. Very complicated, very, very complicated issues. And to say that we can't in 6 months figure out how to file our reports online, I think it troubles me. And anybody who's running for office, I think that they can handle that. If you're going to step up and put your name on the ballot, then you're dedicated to doing what it takes, because you obviously must have a passion for Alaska. And to say that we're going to get this information online and out to the public immediately, that's the bottom line, is get the information to the voters, the people. That's the transparency that I'm talking about. with this year-long exemption or extension, which I appreciate it being dialed back to that, you know, I mean, if I lose this battle and it ends up we do this next year, I mean, that's great, but it's not good enough for me. Today, I mean, for my year-end report that's due on the 15th, I could literally put my, I could write my information down on a piece of paper. I could put it inside of a box filled with lead, ship it on a slow boat to the, by barge to Anchorage, and have it delivered through the slowest means possible to APOC. It may cost me a little more. I could put it in a shipping container, rent a shipping container if I wanted to go that far. You know, and that I mean, that's an extreme, but you can make it where the public doesn't know where your money comes from. All you got to do is be creative. There's some very creative people out here. And frankly, some people wait till the last minute, postmark it, and send it in the slow mail because it won't show up for 7 days. And that's all legal. In the meantime, the public doesn't know who's giving money to people. And I just think that's wrong, and I think that we're quick enough and smart enough to be able to alleviate the pressures that the sponsors have talked about and allow people to have this year-end report filed the old way, and in 6 months we start the new program. I think APOC is ready to go. Otherwise they wouldn't have said you do it now on this one. And maybe they did rush it a little bit and they did change the game in the middle, which I think may be a little bit wrong. But 6 months, we should be able to adjust in 6 months to do our reports electronically. And I maintain my objection, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much for those comments. I would like to point out that's why we have seven folks on this committee, and why we have 40 in the House and 20 at the other end of the building, because we don't always come to the same conclusion. And some things are not purely black and white. You know, the shades of gray, I think, need to be done. I agree on the need for transparency. That's the reason why I put on the record, I think, not only once, but put it on the record twice, that we want to maintain our transparency. I think you make some very good points. Nonetheless, I think it's appropriate, speaking for myself, that this bill move out of committee to be considered by the full body of the House, and perhaps if it passes the House on the body, call that body call the Senate down at the other end of the hall, so we can have 60 people, you know, weigh in on this situation. I try to move when reasonably possible, build out of committee, so that because in a committee we do our best to dig into these subjects to find out are there any potential unintended consequences, hear everybody's concern, hear testimony from everybody on the uncle on all the issues we covered, not only just this. And so there are exceptions, of course, based on the issue. But I like to get as wide a participation as possible on all bills, not only this one. So any other comments on the table? Representative Keller.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to move this out, and I listened very carefully to the objection, and I really appreciate and agree with your desire for transparency. And I did not hear you implying that anybody was wanting to hide information, but I just want to make it very, very clear that I think you said this even that it's the same. We all share the same. Desire, and we want efficiency. We want it to be fair. So I certainly am ready to move it.
I think when we passed the original electronic thing, I forget, you know, a couple of years ago, whenever it was, I did make the point that there are some folks out there who usually don't get elected. There are folks out there who, you know, fill out a form in very, very bad handwriting and put it on the slowest way possible. But that's really the exception rather than the rule. So with that, any other comment? Would you please call the roll for the vote?
Representative Johansson.
No.
Representative P. Wilson.
Yes.
Representative Seaton.
Yes.
Representative Keller.
Yes.
Representative Grunberg, not present. Representative Peterson.
Yes.
Chair Lynn.
Yes.
Five yea, one nay.
And I'd like to thank, and so the bill does in fact pass from committee. I hope it's not a yo-yo. I hope we're done with it this time. And I really would like to thank the entire committee and all the folks who testified on this bill, because it's very, very important. I really respect the electoral process and all that goes into it. So thank you. Thank you so much. Let's take a short at ease while we do the paperwork, and I'd like to have the next bill folks ready to testify. That would be HB 190. Will please come back to order. And before we proceed to the next bill, I have been advised by my staff, my personal staff here, that that a call was placed to Joyce Anderson with the Legislative Ethics Committee, and she advises us that it's perfectly okay for anybody, including incumbents who are now serving down in Juneau, to go use the computers down at the APOC office in Juneau or anywhere else. So we're all doing good. So with that on the record, I'd like to now please move to HB, make sure I got the right one this time, HB 190, that has deals with PFD allowable absences. And please introduce yourself, sir. Now, we had a short hearing on this bill before, mainly to get on the record that we're considering the bill. So we kind of go through that again and bring it up to date again so we can, yeah, and it'd be version R, and I think we adopted that CS at the last meeting. To kind of bring it up to date so we can start anew, because we had a lot going on since then, including the last bill.
For the record, Michael Pascal, Office of Representative Feige. And this bill was heard last year. For those that remember, the purpose of, or our intention with the original bill was to deal with what we felt was an injustice pertaining to military personnel who lost their PFD after 10 years, while members of Congress and their staff were able to continue to receive a PFD after 10 years of absence from the state. So we addressed that in what we thought was a good method, and there were numerous challenges put forth to that, primarily from a legal basis. Not that those challenges were inaccurate by any means, but they were out there. So we tried to come up with a different method, and from there we went to changing the 10-year rule to a 20-year rule, thus at least extending out the issue to give us time to address it. And we did that through a sponsor substitute. But subsequent to doing that, the division and I got into more of a conversation and came up with what we believe is a more effective way to deal with the issue of allowable absences across the board, not just specific to the single item that we were looking at. So that's what got us to the committee substitute that you had adopted earlier this week.
Thank you very much. Any questions at this point? Would you kind of walk us through the bill?
I would, but if I could, if you don't mind, do the
you tell us how you want to do it, and we'll do it.
What put together is, I think, understanding how we got to the law that we have in place before we look at the existing law might be helpful. So, and I believe you have a copy of this, but basically, in 1982, this is what we were dealing with here. And that was the allowable absences were addressed through the definition of an Alaska resident. And you only had, I believe it's five criteria versus, or plus the sixth one, which gave the commissioner the ability to basically add any other reason that they wanted to. In 1997, between that period of time, there were changes made. So instead of having just the five, I believe we were at nine reasons. The commissioner's authority remained in statute at that time. And residency was changed a little bit at that time as well as to how it was defined, in that it referred back to 01-10-055. So that was added to the definition of residency. 1998, the legislature made some significant overhauls to that section of the chapter. So you had state residents here, and again, referring back to Chapter 1 of statute. And then the allowable absences were put in as a separate section and didn't deal with residency at all. It just dealt with here are allowable absences. So you have these allowable absences, and what you'll see is the number of allowable absences has continued to increase as we go through this. And also what you'll note here is this commissioner's authority to adopt other allowable absences was removed. There was also put in place a provision that addressed people that were absent from the state but not on an allowable absence. Okay. In other words, if you were gone from the state less than 180 days during a single year, etc. What also happened at this point is Part C, which was what we were referring to earlier as the 10-year rule, was put into place. And I took the time to go back and read through and listen to all the testimony that I possibly could as this bill went through the House and through the other body during in 1998, and I couldn't find any real discussion on this provision as to why this was in. So where it came from, how it got there, isn't very, very clear. But what it did is basically say, if you were out of the state for 10 years on an allowable absence, with the exception of members of Congress and their staff, which is what's applied to at the bottom, you were no longer eligible for a permanent fund dividend. So that gets us to where we are right now. Same basic statute from what we had in 1998, with some refinement of spouses and some of those types of things, but not major changes. The addition of another item in there, what's on being on a foreign or coastal articles of employment on an ocean-going vessel and the merchant marine. A couple others added to the end here. And as I say, that gets us to what we've got in place in 2011, going into 2012.
And so a military spouse who, when possible, usually follows their spouse to other military locations, assignments, sometimes TDY, temporary duty, and sometimes overseas. That covers them as well as the military member, and that would include children of voting age.
Yeah, correct. And someone's here from the division if we want to get technical on the provisions, but yes, spouse and accompanying minors are treated.
I didn't mean voting age, I mean accompanying minors.
They are treated based upon the criteria meeting the individual that they're accompanying.
Thank you. That's what we do here to get technical. That's why meetings take so long. Please continue.
All right. So this bill that we developed jointly with the department takes regulations that also were put into place during the same period of time and brings those regulations into statute. And by putting them in statute, it's clearer, it's more defined. We reduce subjectivity on the part of hearing officers, administrative hearings, and those types of things. And so that's where we've put this. I want to point out, and there is one error here, the C should be an E on this particular slide. It's correct in your bill. I just had a typo here that I didn't catch until after I had provided the documentation to the committee. And under the allowable absences, we're following the same language with the exception of changing C to E. All the same allowable absences are in place. We didn't alter those. With the exception that we took out the Part C that was in the original bill, or excuse me, that was in the original law, which was the 10-year rule. And what we did is said that what the division currently uses as a presumption that an individual will not return to the state after being absent for 5 years, and put that presumption in statute, and that presumption is based upon the fact that the person has been gone 5 years, and they can rebut that by being physically present in the state for 30 days. That's a requirement. They have to be over a five-year period physically present in the state for 30 days. And maintaining a state residence as is defined in statute. The department currently uses criteria, which is what we've listed here. For the most part, there were some small adjustments made, but nothing overly significant. So that the department can evaluate whether or not someone has sufficient evidence to rebut that presumption of being absent from the state and being a non-resident with no intent to return. The length of time that they are in the state versus length of time that they're gone from the state, the frequency and duration of voluntary trips back, not work-related, they just come back because they have family or other items. Future events beyond the individual's control, such as the financial circumstances of the individual or the ability of the individual to find employment. Ties the individual has established either with the state of Alaska or with another jurisdiction. So it's important to understand, for example, if you look at the registration of vehicle, number C, that registration of vehicle, if you're registering in Alaska, that's indicating an intent to come back. If you're registering it in Florida, it's indicating that you're making ties to the state of Florida. So it works both ways here. Okay? And if you were to go back and look at regulation, you would find it would be written differently in regulation, because legislative legal, this was the form that they put forth for the bill.
Thank you, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What if a person had a vehicle in Florida and in Alaska both? Would that create a problem for eligibility?
Representative Peterson, through the chair, I think I can answer the question, but I'd also, if you would like, we can have the division answer it, but we've talked about this so much. What we're looking here is what is your tie to the state of Alaska, and what is your tie to another state? So you've established a tie to the state of Alaska, but you've also established a tie in this case, say, Florida, which says to me, and I think would say to the division, you're establishing a tie in another state and not intending to, or as likely to, return. So it's all the factors together that make the final determination. Any other?
Continue.
So, as I was saying, these are the criteria that we have that's currently in this similar form in place in regulation, but move those to statute. And so that's what's in the bill.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the presenter? You're reaching for the mic. Representative
Seaton.
I'm having a Rick Perry moment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know these have been difficult over time to look at allowable absences. The 10-year rule, can you give us the rationale for why, if a person takes voluntary employment in another state or in another part of the world for 15, 20 years, that they should still be receiving a permanent fund dividend as a resident of Alaska?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I think that is a bigger question than exactly what you're asking, and that I don't. You're asking that why after 10 years should they continue, and I think that leads to the question of why after 5 years should they continue, or why should there be such a thing as an allowable absence.
And I don't believe that I can answer that, because that was something that the legislature set forth when they created the original permanent fund dividend and the distribution procedures. They decided that individuals should be allowed to continue receiving the PFD after they left the state under certain conditions.
Representative Seaton.
But this bill removes the 10-year rule. And so the difference is saying that there isn't a time format where people have made a job choice. Maybe they're going to be gone for 30 years and serve their entire adult history basically outside the state, except under this provision, I think twice during each 5 years, they have to take a two-week vacation back to the state, which would be their 30 days. So I'm uncomfortable with the idea that people make voluntary choices to leave the state for an extended period of time, in fact, longer than 10 years, and the bill that we have before us wants to say that they should continue receiving the permanent fund dividend as a resident, when they removing that says that there is an unending amount of time in which they can be gone. And I'm just wanting to know the rationale for saying that a 30-year career, and whatever career that is, whether that's a 30-year as a staffer in Congress. Now, I can understand a congressman, senator, because they're elected and sent by the people of the state of Alaska to represent them.
And they are exempt.
I'm, you know, very unsure about congressional staff that have a career choice, that are pursuing a career, as I am with someone who is a teacher or wants to serve 30 years in the Peace Corps. So I just want to know the rationale behind eliminating at least a 10-year limit on that.
Well, I think if you back up and remember where we started last year with this bill, which was dealing with what we considered to be an injustice in a member of Congress, a staff member to a member of Congress receiving an exemption, and someone in the military not receiving the exemption, because that's where we started.
That's the basic thrust of the bill.
The basis that got us to where we are. And in doing that, we went through different processes to try to get here. All of the exemptions beyond the 10-year rule that are currently in place, which would be for members of Congress and their staff, are all individuals that choose a career path that takes them out of the state. Although we elect our senators to Congress and our representatives to Congress, they choose. They're not drafted, just as their staff members choose to work for them, just as someone chooses to be in the military. So it's a question of serving the country, serving the state, and that's a debate for the legislature. That's not a debate for me.
How about folks like the Foreign Service and ambassadors?
The same thing, Mr. Chair, the same thing. So that's not a debate I think I can engage in. But what we try to do is what's a procedure that could be put in place, and by taking this procedure that's been very, very effective in regulation in reducing the number of allowable absences over the years, by putting it in statute, it'll be even more effective, and we were able to tighten it just a little bit at the same time. So the actual number of people receiving PFDs on allowable absences should probably decrease after the 5 years.
Okay. I have a lady who has been waiting patiently through an interesting discussion on the last bill and this one also. So, Representative Johansson.
Thank you. Just so I get clear, the 5 years is simply taking what's in code and codifying it.
Representative Johansson, through the chair, that is basically correct. There are some modifications. I don't want to mislead the committee. For example, use of the word home versus property and the style it's written in, but the basics of it are the same.
Okay.
Continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And then I'm I have the same, I think, concerns that Representative Seaton might have. I don't quite understand or feel comfortable, I guess, with the answer to why is this repealer in there, simply because of some action that happened in the past, and that this is a discussion for the legislature and you're not part of it, but you're here testifying as a legislative staffer. I can see your boss right here. He's in public safety working very hard in another part of the building, but you are you're working for the sponsor, that you are part of the legislative process. So I need to be comfortable to understand, rather than just, well, we've had exemptions in the past, we've amended it, and that's the legislature's decision. But what's before us is a specific bill with a specific repealer, and I don't feel comfortable with it. So I think we need to have more discussion, just so you know where I sit. No disrespect at all.
Okay. Do I respond to that? You know, I want to open public testimony again.
Yes, sir, Chairman, through Representative Johansson, through the chair. Maybe you're misinterpreting mine when I say I don't think that's a debate for me. I believe this is a good bill. This is a good way to handle what I consider to be an injustice. Representative Faye has the same opinion. The debate over that isn't mine. The debate is over the members of the legislature. We clearly believe this is the best way to address the injustice that we believe exists between different classes of people by putting everyone under the same criteria. And so that's where we are on the bill and the reasoning for the bill. So,
what you say right there, I'd like to open public testimony again. And Josephine Davis, are you online?
Yes, sir, I am.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for your patience listening to the interesting discussion last bill and this one also. Please give your name and affiliation, if any, and give us your good testimony.
Thank you, sir. My name is Josephine Davies. I am a retired teacher. I've lived in Bethel, Alaska for the past 27 and a half years. We've raised two children here. My husband is employed in this office and has worked here for 21 years. I'm talking today to really suggest two changes that I would like to see you consider for the allowable absences in the PFD statute. Our family has been penalized due to certain restrictions. In 2010, I was denied my permanent fund dividend because I was out of the state for a couple of weeks past 180 days. My father had some unexpected illnesses. He suffered a mini stroke. He had a pacemaker. He was diagnosed with congestive heart failure. He had carotid surgery. He had tubes inserted in his chest that had to be drained, and on and on. He had in-home therapies. He couldn't cook or drive or do anything for himself. These things were totally unexpected and occurred during a visit that I made to him in November. I also suffered some unexpected illnesses while I was down there. For example, I had an emergency appendectomy myself. As a result of these things, I was gone longer than expected. I would like to suggest that the committee look at the allowable absences in number 6, which allows for providing care for a parent or other relative that requires travel outside the state for treatment at a medical facility. In our case, our parents live outside of the state, so I was not able to claim caring for my father under Section 6. I would suggest that section be amended to include parents who live outside the state, even though we are permanent residents of Alaska. I would like also for you to consider that in-laws be added to that, because if my mother-in-law, for example, needed care, and my husband, because he's still employed while I'm retired, I would go out and help her, and I would not want to risk losing my dividend because of that. I would like you to consider that, first of all. The second change that I would like you to consider is in Section 17C, where it says that absences, if you claim one of these absences, cannot be more than 45 days in addition to those allowable absences. Our daughter is getting married this year, and we are I'm expecting to be gone for about 30 days to help her. We also need to go down and see our elderly parents again. We had standing travel plans for the summer. Every summer we go out. We call it a vacation, but we've never in those 27 years gone any place except to visit and stay with one or the other of our parents. We help them in any number of ways, plumbing, painting, car repairs. This is what we do when we go out in the summer. So I had standing plans to go out for 2 months in the summer, which put me over the 180 days. I couldn't change that, and I expect I'll be, with the wedding and everything, I'll be beyond that this year as well. So I would like you to consider extending that 45 days to 90 days in that paragraph. I thank you for your time, and I'm open to any questions if you have any.
Again, I thank you for your patience on that. This bill is primarily directed toward, military, and I think you raised some good, interesting points. It might be something to consider for other other proposed legislation. Let's go around the table. I think Representative Johansson, and then Representative Seaton, and then Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to make it clear that this bill is a repealer of the 10-year, whether it's military or whatever. So whatever the stated intent is different, but what the actual bill does is repeals that section. So military are included, but it encompasses everything, unless I'm mistaken. I don't know. Maybe I'm not reading it correctly.
Representative Johansson, through the chair.
Identify yourself again, please. I'm
Michael Pascal, Office of Representative Eric Feige. And a little bit to the question that you're raising, because I understand the concern and I agree with the concern. I think the importance from the numbers that the division has given me, and of course you're free and encourage you to have the division testify in front of you, they are available. Of the 16,000 that in 2010, of the 16,000 people that were given allowable absences under the provisions that we have in place, the 10-year rule only caught 187 people. So between the fifth year and the 10th year, the division is able to shrink that number, that amount. So when you look at extending this out for a longer period of time, which I understand that concerns, because somebody could be absent 20 years or 30 years from the state and continue to do it. But if you look at the number the 10-year rule is catching, which was 187 in 2010, it's a very small number of people. So it's not a large group of people receiving the PFD for a long period of time under the allowable absence. They've already been weeded out, and the belief is having this in statute will even weed them out even better.
Okay, thank you very much. You had comments, Greg. We're up against a hard break here, as they say in the news. And so I'm going to have to reschedule this again. And so we're going to hold this until next committee meeting, which will be on Valentine's Day. So we expect candy. Okay. And we on the 14th, we're going to be hearing again HB 190. We're trying with your bill to bring it to some kind of resolution. And we'll be hearing HB 2. Wait a minute. Well, yes, I know, but we also have another bill we didn't hear today on I see Representative Garibag on HJR 33. We need to put that in there. So we'll be hearing the next session, continuation of this bill, 190 H.R. 33, on amending the Constitution regarding campaign money, H.B. 2, divestment in Iran, H.B. 254, Alaska Native and Advisory Council. I do the best we can, and one of the more delightful things I'd like to have the committee do is extend a very happy birthday to our friend Lori Rowland over there. And she's a House Records aficionado, and I understand we've done some research here. Then you coming up on your 29th. 29th what? I don't know. So happy birthday to you. If we had more time, we'd sing happy birthday and put that on the record. But happy birthday, I think, everybody on the committee. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.